Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
The 49ers accepted the challenge of two road games to start the year, and they passed the test honestly with flying colors. That's the best that the 49ers have played since they lost the NFC title game in Seattle, where Navarro Bowman's knee was turned into a pretzel. It's the best job they've done outclassing their opponent since Kyle Shanahan was hired. It's their largest margin of victory away from home since 2013. 572 yards is the fifth most in franchise history and the most since 2012. Say what you want about the Cincinnati Bengals, what they are and what they aren't. The 49ers have not been upgraded to the team that does that to anybody, regardless of their skill level, until just last week, which was technically yesterday, pardon me. And welcome to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. What a game the 49ers put together, a full football thought in Cincinnati to go 2-0 on the year. Joe Staley's injury withstanding, was an outstanding day of football, and the challenge is now coming home and playing with expectations against a Pittsburgh Steelers team that will not be starting a future Hall of Fame quarterback. That's a must-win game. Sunday, Levi's Stadium, must-win football game.
It is.
For credibility's sake, to keep people leaning forward, this becomes the, if you have turned this around, this is no longer a tripping point.
Well, I mean, even at that, week three should never give you a must-win.
Must-win is a strange, it's a little bit of a strange term to graft onto this, but I think I basically agree with what you're saying, which is this has gone from a situation where you're coming home 2-0 going, boy, it'd be nice if we get a win this week to get 3-0. To a situation where you'll be disappointed if you don't get the win to get to 3-0. If not a must win, it is a disappointing if you don't get it win.
Should win.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm not sure that I can buy must win in week three.
Semantics aside, this just became a situation you better look good in. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's it. There's no such thing as a really good team losing a home opener to a backup quarterback unless something else goes tremendously wrong.
That's a fact.
Yeah. And I'm not even saying they're a good football team yet, but you want to be competent? Do you want me to stop thinking you a fool and assuming the worst will go wrong and just expecting the bad? Like, past 5 years of watching the 49ers, I don't care what's happening in the game, the other shoe's about to drop, right? They're like, oh, congratulations, you're up 17-3 early today. They're going to lose.
I have
they'll find defeat. They'll snatch it from the jaws of victory. Like, this is a time where it's you can turn back towards the darkness or head towards the light. And I really hope that they go to the light and they seem to have enough talent and enough coaching to do it.
Yeah. And I think maybe this will appeal to Ratto more, phrasing it from the negative direction. This has gone from a game where, if that's a full-strength Steelers team coming off a win against Seattle, you got nothing to lose, really. If you go in and beat them, wow. If you lose, hey, that's a really good football team. Now you're in a situation where, if you lose, you kind of have something to lose. You will at least fall in the estimation of people. You're going to be expected to win this game. And to that point, I believe the line went from Pittsburgh by 1 to Niners by 7 from Saturday to Monday.
Right, and that's not just Sharps loading up. That's the most important player on their team isn't playing. Go do something about that.
Yeah, and the Niners looked good for a second straight week. Those things combined swung a line by 8 points. Expectations have changed.
I think the line mostly changed because of Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Because that's how that happens. And beyond, I mean, if they lose on Sunday, that to me is not sort of a catastrophe because they still have, they've established that there are things they can do. But there are games in which they won't be able to do them because they're like almost every other team in football. So I don't see that, you know, week three. If you get profoundly disappointed by the 49ers for losing game three, I'm not sure that's a 49ers problem as much as that is a you problem.
I disagree.
Well, fine, but I'm going to finish my point.
Oh, sorry.
It is capable for teams that have a window of anywhere from 6 to 10 to 10 and 6, as the 49ers do, to lose games that they shouldn't lose and win games they shouldn't win, because that's the nature of the new NFL. And I think you have to allow for the fact that this is not going to be a linear kind of a path for the 49ers. They will have setbacks that they shouldn't have, and this could be one of them. Not because they're an inferior team or because they failed to remember what they did 2 weeks before, but because stuff happens. And I think you have to allow for stuff happens.
Right. It's a very weird approach to me to look at something and say, yes, they ought to win, but stuff happens. Yeah, of course stuff happens. Stuff happens everywhere all the time in life. But the Niners have gone from a team in 2 days, a team that I think reasonably could have been looked at as, oh, it'd be cute if they win the first two, their first real challenges in week three, to a team that week three ought not be a challenge given what we now know, and they should win this game, and expectations ought to change.
No Big Ben, no Le'Veon Bell, no Crowder, no Antonio Brown, 0-2, and you're 2-0 with a quarterback who just played his best game with, I mean, like, look, I don't know what we're even arguing about here. This is a game good football teams win. You beat a backup quarterback in your home opener if you want to be taken really seriously. How seriously are we going to take you? Well, you know, here's what happens. If you are 2-0, you got a 73% chance of making the playoffs. All right? If you're 3-0, do you think it gets better or worse?
I'm going to guess better.
Ding, 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 ding. Go 3-0, go into your bye week, and come out to play a who knows what kind of Cleveland Browns team you're going to see on Monday Night Football. We'll know a little bit more after tonight's Monday Night Football game, which is not too far away from kicking off. Cleveland Browns are playing the New York Jets tonight. Like, if the Cleveland Browns, you know, again, there are no must-win football games early this year. But it kind of is for Cleveland tonight. All the hype that's been attached to the Cleveland Browns, if you can't beat a mononucleosis New York Jets football team that lost at home to the Buffalo Bills in week one? I mean, come on, man. Like, we can connect some dots. And this isn't that far away of like, oh, now you're talking about the opponent that they have to face in week 11. So much can change between now and week 11. I don't think that much can change for the 49ers or the Steelers between now and kickoff of their next week's game. It's kind of they are who they are.
Yeah.
So I do think that this one comes with a sense of gravity to it that we haven't placed on any game at Levi's Stadium in a long, long time.
It's more gravity than they haven't had in the past. I will grant you that. But I'm not going to allow for the possibility that this is a must-win in week three, even if it just means for their own reputations. Because their own reputations, if they fall and rise every week just based on a result, then what have they accomplished? I mean, if you tell me what they're going to be in 3 weeks, then I'll tell you what we should. I mean, if they're 5-1 after week seven and their one loss is the Steelers, what are we talking about?
I think
they're capable of losing to the Steelers. I also think they're capable of beating them. I don't think any game for these guys is a mortal lock at any point or one in which they should attach too much importance or too little. I mean, this is, you don't suddenly try to peak in week three. And I mean, I will grant you, you guys have your own opinions on this. I don't think you can have a must win in week three unless you think that you're going to be 4-12.
But I do think,
and this is one of the winnable games. I don't get it. I don't believe in it.
Because I think we're getting hung up on the semantics of must win game. We're clearly,
well, yeah, that's what I am hung up on.
Okay. Well, clearly this is not a game that they must win or face dire consequences.
Right. There's no elimination.
Right. But I think the point of saying it's a must win game somewhat hyperbolically is making the point that it becomes an important game if you want to continue to establish yourself in the way you have the first 2 weeks. And I think, whereas, I guess the other response I'd give to you is, yeah, we do reevaluate things every week based on the result. Now, each new result is maybe a less significant data point than the one before it because we have more total data points. But the notion that we don't change our opinion one way or the other after a result is crazy to me. Of course we do. That's how we form our opinion, is update it after new results.
Well, let's just put it this way, since we're all hung up on must win. This is a chance to put on the big boy pants. Do they fit? Yes or no? Do you think you can wear the big boy pants? Are you a big boy? Or are you just the fattest kid in the Husky section? Are you a big boy? This is an opportunity to try on to see if the big boy pants fit, because a big boy can wear these pants. A big boy can beat an unproven backup quarterback who's never started a game in football with no discernible playmakers to really start on a fantasy team around him. Mike Tomlin is a very good coach. Kyle Shanahan's supposed to be better.
330 Texter says it's a can't-miss game opportunity.
There we go.
I like that.
There we go. 888. 888-957-9570. If you want to yell at Ray Ratto, go ahead. We'd love to hear from you. 6.2 yards per rush. That's officially good. 6.2 yards per rush. That means your backfield is doing something. Michael Irvin says Matt Breida reminds him of someone else.
Watching Breida run that game was incredible, man. Did you see that run, what he did to Jackson? Oh, my God, dude. That's taking a dude out in a phone booth. That was in a phone booth. That's like you going in, Clark Kent coming out, Superman, in a phone booth. He said, doo-doo-doo, and then cut all the way back. That was Barry Sanders-ish right there in the hole, making runs like that.
Barry Sanders-ish. Doesn't mean he's Barry Sanders, but that was a, I hear what he's saying. Like this would be a big boy pantsish situation. But they were good.
Is Barry Sanders-ish less than Barry Sanders-esque? Or Barry Sanders light? Where? How do we fit that?
I think it's definitely less than Barry Sanders light.
If he had said of the Sanders,
yeah,
that would have been a compliment too high.
Could have been Miles Sanders.
Ish, yeah. And esque is a great question. I don't know what ranks higher than the other. I'll say this: he looks nothing like Barry Sanders at any time. That being said, I'm quite impressed with Matt Breida. Quite impressed, and I think the way he moves around in small spaces to create extra yards is unique and is a high-level skill in the NFL.
It was a great day for the offensive line. You can't have a great day for your running backs without it being a great day for the offensive line. Highlight Weston Richburg, who definitely played his best game with the 49ers. There's no doubt about that. Unfortunately, Joe Staley's injury is lingering. No doubt about that. How they go about approaching solving the Joe Staley can't play for a significant amount of time here problem, well, that's something we will all be looking at. Kyle Shanahan talked about Justin School coming to the rescue.
When he came in, he did a good job. You know, I mean, we were mainly running the ball at that time, but it was good to get him in a real NFL game, especially since he's going to be playing a lot next week. The game's not too big for him. I mean, that's what we liked a lot about him, you know, being a four-year starter in the SEC at Vanderbilt. You know, got to play against a lot of good players, always throughout an entire game. He played the whole game pretty well. Wasn't always a ton of great highlight tape plays, but he was a guy the game wasn't too big for and helped his team win.
So Shanahan basically said, we will learn more about Justin School next week. Justin School would be facing, what, T.J. Watt this week?
That is not necessarily what I'm excited about hearing about my backup tackle, is We'll see what he's got when he lines up against TJ Watt. But this is the NFL, I guess.
Trial by fire.
That's what happens, man. And I guess the bright side of that is if he struggles against TJ Watt, you can say, well, it should get easier next week. Fingers crossed. Well, probably 2 weeks at that point, but still.
Well, it'll definitely get easier next week.
Yeah, the following week will be the easiest week of the season for the Niners.
What's absolutely amazing about this program and this program's audience is on the text line right now. We have people power ranking ish, esque, and like.
Tremendous ish, work.
Esque is definitely better than ish, according to Jim and Campbell.
I think Jim's right.
Someone else is saying that ish, esque, and like is the order that you would want to go in.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think that's right. Ish is the lowest level, then esque, and then like. Barry Sanders light is the highest level of comparison.
Did you say light or like?
Ray said light, I believe. L-I-T-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
He's not Barry Sanders like. He's not. I don't think he can be that good.
No.
Let me just say that this play call from Kyle Shanahan was Bill Walsh-ish, esque, and like.
First down, they take it one way, roll the other. Garoppolo
touchdown.
Looking down the field and wide open, and that will be a touchdown for Marquise Goodwin. What a start for the 49ers. A 38-yard touchdown, and there was not a Bengal defender within 15 yards of Marquise Goodwin.
Traditionally speaking, you do not want the analyst to step on the touchdown call of the play-by-play man. But
one more
in
time,
this case,
listen to Chris Spielman.
First down, they fake it one way, roll the other. Garoppolo
touchdown.
Down the field.
In this case, it's helpful because it tells you just how unbelievably open Marquise Goodwin was.
I want my analyst to say that. I want you to call this play. If you're wrong, I'll bury you.
Sure.
But yeah, it you don't have to hear another word at that point. And it's just, you know, adding color. But yeah, if you blurt out touchdown a second into the play, you've said everything that can be said.
That's true.
Unless, of course, you're Brent Musburger, and you need to set it up a little bit more than that. I mean, there are some things that did not go well for the Raiders.
They've got a third and 20. The ball at the 42. They send Robinson back out that side, and Conley's going to have him.
Defense looks like they're going to play the sticks, play three deep, try to prevent
Mahomes
the big play.
Got time, and he's going to fire for the long ball. Touchdown!
No, that was too easy.
Mecole Hardman got deep, split the secondary, and the Chiefs lead for the first time today.
Having said all of that, as bad as that second quarter was, as loose as that game got in that moment, much like the 49ers, who are a much better football team today than in any day of last year, the Raiders are a much better football team today than any other day last year. And even though yesterday was full of offensive disappointment, Josh Jacobs alone has to make you feel better about this team's offense. The way that he finishes off some runs, the way that he's got some nastiness in him, I'm impressed. I really am. You're finally seeing some fruit come to bear on the John Gruden got hired to be our coach. For how long? For how much? Tree? Like, you're finally starting to see some of it. It was a rough quarter of football. But that's a better football team. Don't get cocky. Stay humble. Richard Sherman on staying humble.
Thank you to the Niner faithful. Like I said earlier in the year, just stay humble. You know, I know everybody's out there probably going crazy at the bar and having a good time. And all my friends and family and my boy DZ's probably out. You know, Niner gang, or be Marquise. But everybody just stay humble. You know, this is a franchise that won 5 championships. We're trying to get back to that. And we're working hard, and it's a work in progress. But we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Tyler is in Rockland. Tyler, you're on 95.7 The Game.
What's up, DB? Thanks for taking my call. Had two things I want to talk about during the Michael Irvin interview. I don't know what it is with the old guys, but he's over here just saying there's no shutdown corners in the league other than Jalen Ramsey, but it's like Marcus Lattimore, Stephon Gilmore, Xavier Rhodes. I mean, there's a ton of guys. Don't know where that's all coming from. The second thing was on the refs and letting him play. I completely agree with that. But then they totally ruin it by giving the benefit of the doubt to the whole sticking with the call in the field. So it's like just admit that you guys don't get all the calls right, and then just go look in there with a clean slate. That's all I got to say.
Thank you very much.
To me, they would save themselves a lot of trouble if they simplify. Well, we could talk about this for an entire show. They should simplify the whole damn rule book. But as it pertains to replay specifically, I agree with Tyler. The right language is make your best judgment of the call based on the available angles. There's no reason to have this clear and obvious nonsense in it, because the notion that they probably got it right the first time, if that was right, we wouldn't need replay. They probably didn't get it right the first time. So look at the video and make your best judgment based on the evidence available. That's the only language they should need for replay as far as I'm concerned.
Al Riveron, as the adjudicator of anything in football, is a self-defeating sentence.
Seems like it.
I mean, he used to be on the field, and they moved him to the replay booth. And they called it a promotion, but every time...
But is it?
Every time I hear his name, my heart sinks.
You assume something stupid is going to happen.
Because it inevitably does. And the real problem isn't the guys on the field as much as the fact is that they've been told, don't use common sense, don't operate on what you saw, operate on this rule book that's as thick as a whale omelet, and then adjudicate it at the time while knowing that everything you do is going to be second-guessed, because we don't want you to use common sense and we don't want you to use the skills you've built up over 25 years of doing this. They basically use replay for the wrong reasons and in the wrong situations, because ultimately they have a game that is ungovernable. And it's not getting any better by adding technology run by people who don't know what they're looking at, because they're working with the same idiotic rule book too. It's a hamster wheel.
By the way, the NFL's rule book should be called the whale omelet. It really should be.
Yeah.
It really should be. The whale omelet. Fantastic. Does this have anything to do with the Hartford Whalers hat that you're wearing today?
No, it has nothing to do with that. By the way, the Browns are already driving.
888-957-9570. That is a fumble, by the way, and a recovery by the Cleveland Browns. Oh, maybe an incomplete pass.
No, it's an incompletion.
Here's the thing. Did they blow that play dead? Because if they did, they can't look at it. I hope they didn't.
No, they clearly blew it dead because they called it an incomplete pass.
Oh, well, there you go. We do have Monday Night Football underway. It is the Freddie Kitchens-Greg Williams coaching matchup that the world's been waiting for. We will give you any and all pertinent information from this game as it develops. Obviously, we got the for the 49ers, they got the Steelers up. Then they got a bye week. Then they've got this very Cleveland Brown team.
Cleveland, a lot of Monday Night action.
Oh, they're the team du jour.
Yeah, they are.
This is Cleveland's moment. Again, it'd be really hard to explain to somebody who just woke up from a coma. But this is, this is supposed to be Cleveland's moment. So
that coma could have lasted anywhere from 5 to 25 years, and it would still be hard to explain it to someone.
Here's the goofy thing. You know what I think you kind of want to be rooting for if you're a 49er fan? You kind of want Cleveland to win and then win again and then look really good, like coming into the Monday night game at Levi's Stadium, because then you can finally get your shot to play a team that's got a little gravitas to it. You know what I mean? Like, if you weren't impressed over wins by Tampa Bay and Cincinnati, the first thing I would say is, okay, you're an astute football fan. You understand things are not always created equal. Having said all that, who the hell do you think you are? I love you. I really do. But you used to be the easy game on the schedule.
That's the thing.
That's the same thing that can be said for the 49ers.
Exactly.
That's the point.
Used to be the easy game. They themselves were the easy game on the schedule.
There is no better explanation of why it's okay to be happy and excited as a 49er fan than simply they have played bad football teams every year of this run. They just haven't consistently beaten them. So when you put a whooping on a bad football team, that's something to get excited about. Maybe not for the Patriots, but for the Niners, absolutely.
How to slow down a Pittsburgh pass rush, especially with McGlinchey out, but Joe Staley out. We're going to certainly talk about that this week. We got to talk a little bit about someone who just saw the Steelers right in front of his own two eyes. And you know what? Our next guest did just that. Kenny Albert of Fox Sports. He had the Steelers-Seahawks game yesterday. Beyond that, he had 49ers Tampa week one as well. We'll ask him about what he's seen out of the Niners, out of their next opponent. The perfect conversation for a Monday afternoon. He is next in more of your calls as we take you to 6 o'clock tonight here on 95.7 The Game. It is really good to have you along. And I got to say this, too. Welcome. Welcome. We have an affiliate. ESPN 1320 up in Sacramento. You are now part of the family. You are taking our show from 2 to 6 o'clock Monday through Friday. It is good to have you on. It is good to have you here. We are going to try to be really nice to the board op so he can coordinate all the commercials. What's his name again? What's the new board op's name?
Charlie.
Part of the family now. Charlie, welcome.
You're doing a brutal job. We can tell from here.
By the way, this comes with absolutely no raise and more responsibility. Have fun with that.
I saw some people tweeting and texting from Sacramento, so Charlie's doing his job. Great work, Charlie.
Way to go, Charlie.
We are definitely on the air up there.
Part of a Monster Monday brought to you by Benjamin Moore Paints. Paint like no other. You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Do it, Charlie.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
He had the call for the 49ers in Tampa Bay back in week one, and yesterday he got a very good look at the 49ers' next opponent, obviously evolving in the wrong direction with Ben Roethlisberger's season-ending injury. He just saw the Steelers and the Seahawks Sunday in Pittsburgh. Kenny Albert, good enough to join us here on the Dial Pad guest line from Fox Sports, one of the voices of the NFL. Kenny, it's great to have you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you very much for joining us. I know you spent yesterday in Pittsburgh. Let's start with Ben Roethlisberger's injury, obviously. It's the biggest story of the day, and it's a season changer for a team that all of a sudden looks like it might be in a little bit of turmoil.
Right. It was crazy today when I heard the news that he's most likely out for the season. Obviously, he played the first half in our game yesterday and came down on his elbow early when he was sacked and then seemed to be having some trouble on the sidelines as well. And doesn't come out for the second half. Mason Rudolph winds up out at quarterback for the Steelers, and I thought he looked pretty good in his NFL debut. Had the one interception early, which wasn't really his fault. It deflected off the hands of Dante Moncrief. But as far as Roethlisberger, obviously a shocking situation. He's been a Steeler since 2004. We all know the success he's had, winning a couple of Super Bowls and going to four AFC Championship games, and he's really been the face of the Steelers franchise, along with head coach Mike Tomlin. So an 0-2 start for the first time since 2013, and now they lose their quarterback as well.
Kenny, the 49ers really batten down their hatches after a week in Youngstown getting ready for Cincinnati. You saw them back in week one. You had the call. It was a sloppy game in Tampa, but they controlled a sloppy game with a much better defensive line. And I don't really know who the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are, but the 49ers, after 2 weeks, look like they might be a competent football team, which upgrades them from being a bad football team.
Well, I was impressed with what we saw week one, especially in the second half. Like you said, the first half was pretty sloppy. We threw a graphic up at one point listing all the mistakes, the miscues, the fumbles, the interceptions, the turnovers, et cetera, the penalties, a combined 12 penalties in the first half last week in Tampa. But the second half, in particular for the 49ers, was much better. They come up with the two interception returns for touchdowns, and it's been well chronicled in your area, only two interceptions all of last year, and they come up with three week one of the season against the Bucs and return two for scores. So I didn't see any of the game yesterday, the Bengals game, but off to a 2-0 start, and that's obviously good news for the 49ers and their fan base.
You've seen enough football over the years to know that championships don't get won in week two, but teams get eliminated as early as week two. Does Pittsburgh look like that team now that they're going into week three, not only without Roethlisberger, but also Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, James Conner? I mean, they look like they're sort of assembling an injury and contract-riddled train wreck.
Well, they obviously had a tough time Sunday night, losing by 30 up in Foxborough, but a lot of teams would have had a tough time against the Patriots that night. However, now they lose yesterday's game. They lose Roethlisberger. Like you said, no more Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell for the second straight season. Connor had a good year last year. He tweaked his knee rush today. Moncrief, who I mentioned earlier, who's one of the receivers they brought in, had four drops in week one. He has the pass go off his hands yesterday and gets benched for the rest of the game. Doesn't play for the remainder of that second half. You know, defensively, they've made some nice additions. Devin Bush, the first-round pick out of Michigan, he had a big play yesterday when he scooped up a fumble and almost returned it all the way for a touchdown. But if you're a Steelers fan, you have to be pretty concerned now with the 0-2 record and with the loss of Ben Roethlisberger, absolutely.
Obviously, out here in 49er land, there's it may be that the Rams are the class of the division, but the Seahawks are still the one that kind of hangs over the Niners. And we thought Cincinnati was better than they looked yesterday after a week one battle with the Seahawks. And look, Pittsburgh, as beat up as they became, I'm starting to wonder, is Seattle good? I mean, they're 2-0, or are they maybe propped up a little bit by lesser opponents?
Well, at one point, it looked like the Steelers were about to take control of the game. They had a 10-7 lead early in the second half and the football, and that's when that play occurred when Rudolph was intercepted by McDougal on the deflection off the hands of Moncrief. So that was really the turning point of the game, and Seattle kind of took charge from there. Russell Wilson throws three touchdown passes. The defense made some big plays, and I was impressed with the Seahawks. You know, you look at them on paper, you look at the depth chart, and it's kind of odd not to see the names Sherman and Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. But obviously trading for Jadeveon Clowney 2 weeks ago was a huge addition. Bobby Wagner, five-time Pro Bowler, the middle linebacker who's still at the top of his game, he was outstanding yesterday, and some of the young pieces they brought in the secondary. So they've done a nice job replacing some of the guys they've lost. Offensively, Russell Wilson had a tremendous game yesterday. Similar to Ben Roethlisberger, Wilson lost his all-time leading receiver. Doug Baldwin had more receptions for Wilson than any other wide receiver in Wilson's eight-year career. He retired, so they have some young pieces on the outside. DK Metcalf, the rookie from Mississippi, has had a good start to his career. He had a real good game week one, made some nice catches yesterday. So they have young tight ends. They have sort of a two-headed running back system now. But I was impressed. Steelers come away with a victory in a tough place to win. In fact, as a franchise, they had been shut out in their last two games in Pittsburgh. Not only did they lose those games, but they didn't score any points. They put 28 on the board yesterday.
Kenny Albert here on 95.7 The Game. All guests on the dial pad. Guest line, of course, is very familiar voice all over the Fox coverage of the NFL. And you got a really cool assignment coming up, a century of football celebrating the NFL's 100th season. You're going to be moderating something in New York City this week. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right, it should be a real fun event. Actually heading there now as we speak, and it's at the Paley Center in New York, and it will involve four very special guests: Carl Banks, who won a couple of Super Bowls with the Giants, the Hall of Fame broadcaster Leslie Visser, Neil Pilson, who was the president of CBS Sports for many years in the 80s and 90s, and Joe Horrigan, who recently retired, who spent 42 years at the Hall of Fame as the curator and the person who would accumulate all of the terrific artifacts. So heading into that event now in celebration of the NFL 100. Tomorrow, September 17th, is actually the anniversary. 99 years ago, tomorrow is the anniversary of the meeting in Canton, Ohio, the formation of what became the NFL with George Halas and some of the all-time legends at that meeting. So it's the 100th NFL season. Tomorrow's the 99th anniversary. And then later this week, I'm also very excited, my partner Rondé Barber will be inducted into the Bucks Ring of Honor on Sunday. And John Lynch went through it a couple of years ago, who was Rondé's teammate, of course, with the Buccaneers. And we'll work the Giants-Buccaneers telecast on Sunday. And Rondé's brother Tiki will be on hand as well, because Rondé has to leave the booth midway through the second quarter to head downstairs. He'll be the 13th Tampa Bay player or coach or management personnel to be inducted into the Ring of Honor. A lot of his former teammates will be on hand, so that should be real exciting on Sunday afternoon down in Tampa.
You referenced 100 years of NFL football, and based on the number of holding calls, the first 2 weeks feel like they've lasted 100 years. At what point do you think the league is going to basically sort of call off the dogs on that, Or is this going to be one of those things where teams are simply going to have to deal with the fact that the league wants less holding actually committed as opposed to less holding called?
And we had a bunch of them yesterday. I think the Seahawks offensive line was flagged 5 times for holding. It seems like we usually see it early in the season. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the penalties do seem to go down on average as the season moves along. And on many occasions, there are points of emphasis. We saw it this year during preseason with the fact that pass interference can now be reviewed, whether or not the flag was thrown. We had one in our game yesterday where there was no flag, and Pete Carroll threw the challenge flag, and they dropped one for pass interference. We saw it in the game last week between the Buccaneers and the 49ers with Mike Evans and Richard Sherman, where one was called early on a challenge, and then later in the game, within 2 minutes, it wasn't a coach's challenge. It was a booth review where it was not called on the pass intended for Evans towards the end of the game. But the games, you know, are taking a little bit longer than we're used to, probably 3 hours, 10 minutes, 15 minutes on average over the first couple of weeks. And you know, that's what I've heard from a lot of fans and friends that I've spoken to, is about the choppiness of some of the games, at least, over the first 2 weeks. So hopefully it calms down a little bit.
Kenny, thank you very much. Good talking a little football with you. Break a leg tomorrow night. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Anytime.
Now thrown in the eye by Juszczyk to get a throw. And to the end zone, wide open. It is a touchdown for the rookie Samuel. And for Samuel, that is his first career NFL touchdown. He's on his way to a 100-yard receiving game today.
Had himself a debut a week ago. Now he's in the end zone, and Deebo Samuel continues to climb up this depth chart, if not be at the top of it right now. And we were just informed by the 49ers he'll be joining us at Wednesday, 5 o'clock on Wednesday. We're going to say hello to Deebo Samuel here on 95.7 The Game. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to talking with you here with Ray Ratto and Matt Kolsky. Good to have you. This is Jeff in Marin. Jeff, what do you got? Oh, Jeff. I guess Jeff is no longer there. It's too bad, Jeff. Your one chance was in front of you. And it didn't happen.
Waited so long for that.
Look, what are we supposed to think the Niners are going to do about Joe Staley? Because this is an important piece. I don't know if you can just go ahead and take Mike McGlinchey and move him over. We had Alex Boone on earlier today. He said,
I'm not a big fan of moving guys around. Number one, you're in a good place right now with McGlinchey. I think he's a phenomenal player. He's a young player. He's got so much potential. Let him just roll with the way he is. I think when you move him, you kind of mess his mindset up as to what am I doing? I'm on a natural good flow. And then all of a sudden you've just made me a left-handed guy. Like, it's just not a good thing.
So how they solve this issue, it could either be done with Justin School and you hope that he gets it done. McGlinchey moving is an option. Just saying you're the left tackle of the future and the future is now. There's the possibility of a trade, of giving a pick away, possibly a player, possibly Solomon Thomas, if you're ready to give up there. Possibly Dante Pettis, if you're maybe willing to give up there. I mean, they traded up for the guy, but if he's not going to be out there making plays for you, what good is he for you if not any value? I don't know how much value there would be. But the value that he had, Ray, would be in the unknown.
The problem is most people aren't going to give you much for the unknown. And in the case of Pettis, a guy that one team drafted high and then sort of fell out of favor with it within a year has significantly less value than just a high draft pick in general. I mean, I think, you know, the fact that Pettis is very clearly, if not fourth on the depth chart, then a shaky third, makes me think that they wouldn't get enough for him to put him on the market. So beyond that, it sounds like Kyle Shanahan's already made up his mind about what he's going to do. I mean, he said in his press conference, it's unlikely that they would move McGlinchey over, and he also said there didn't seem to be much in the left tackle trade market. So it sounds like he's already decided what he's going to do, and it's not moving McGlinchey, and it's not shopping.
Yeah, always. I mean, we would love to if there were options. Yeah, you look at anything that's possible. I don't think there's a ton of great options out there.
There you go. Not a ton of great options out there. And the fact that Laremy Tunstall just went for essentially two first-round picks to the Houston Texans, and yes, we know Kenny Stills was involved in that as well. It would be pricey to try to fix the Staley injury with someone who's not on the roster right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they can afford to be patient, especially if they think that this is a season that might go somewhere for them.
Well, let me ask you this. Where'd you have the Niners before the season, record-wise?
I mean, it sounds like a cop-out, but I thought 8-8 would be a four-game improvement, and asking for more than four games improvement feels like you're asking for a lot. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I thought they would be 8-8, which means 7-9 is on the table and 9-7 is on the table.
Right. You thought they'd be between 7-9 and 9-7, and you thought we'd be pretty happy with that.
Yes, improvement to get to there.
So, for me, that's not the year you mortgage the future for the now. The year you mortgage the future for the now is the year you go in expecting to be a playoff team with disappointment if you don't get there.
But then they started 2-0?
But they should have started 2-0, even if they were going to be 8-8.
Well, you know what? When you look at the difficulty of their schedule and find the math on it,
yeah.
I hear you, but I was never really assuming 2-0. Like, 2-0 to me is still a surprise.
Okay. I mean, look, they look good. So it's not that I don't understand the idea. Of course I do. And, boy, in the NFL, you can get good fast and you can get bad fast. So when you're good, yeah, you want to try to do whatever you can. But if you're targeting next year as the year to be really good, wasn't the first-round pick going to be part of that? And he wasn't going to be a tackle or a defensive back. And to me, given that scenario, I want that pick, and he was never going to be an offensive tackle or a defensive back, then I'm not going to trade that pick for an offensive tackle or a defensive back.
I'm not sure he wouldn't be an offensive tackle, because at some point you have to replace Staley either way.
But he just signed an extension. I do not think next year's first-rounder was his replacement. I really don't.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, unless all 3 years are guaranteed, they could make the cynical choice and just say, well, we're going to get this guy, and we're going to groom him for 2 years. I mean, I don't know where they think they are as a franchise right now. I don't think they've said this is a Super Bowl contender, but I also don't know if they think, oh God, we're definitely a 10-win team.
For what it's worth, very little guaranteed money for Joe Staley after this season. So they certainly could get out of it, but I don't think that's the goal.
The goal was to be able to play him until the day he could no longer play. The problem is he's changed the timeline. At least a bit.
Yeah.
So there's no way. So again, I think what you're going to see is them just do the incremental change for now and see what they have from Staley when he comes back. And then they'll, make that decision. But I don't think drafting an offensive tackle is off the board if, let's say, they're picking in the middle of the round. I mean, at some point, unless you're going to be aggressive and try to move up and get a quarterback, because that's where the two best players are, whether you wouldn't just take the best player you could get.
Fair enough.
The one thing I know, we have improvement.
Yeah.
And I think the 49ers are matriculating all the way from bad football team to competent football team. I'm not even going all the way to good. Competent. I think competent teams win their home openers against backup quarterbacks. I think competent teams turn field goals in the red zone into touchdowns from the red zone. I think competent football teams mean you hit on one or two big plays, not per week, but per half. I think competent football teams mean you take care of the business in front of you. And I really hope that that's what they are now. I don't know where this goes, but today, they're a lot better than they used to be. And I want to say that about the Raiders, too. The Raiders had such a bad second quarter, they got clocked in it, that it's hard to see how good they really have improved, how well they've improved across the board. From a coaching staff to a talent standpoint, from an execution standpoint, and it was a lousy day for the offense yesterday. Here's something that I think could help put into perspective a little bit of that loss.
Do you realize that Patrick Mahomes has only played 8 quarters so far this season? 2 of his 8 quarters have been quarters in which he's thrown for 200-plus yards. Not the game, but just in a quarter.
Not the game.
Yeah. Patrick Mahomes is a freak of nature playing out in front of us with a talent that is so superior to his peers that, I mean, he was compared in the broadcast to Steph Curry shooting threes, which is about as much of a compliment as you can give to being that much better than your peer group at anything. It really is amazing what this young man has accomplished a very short time into his career.
He wasn't compared to Steph Curry shooting threes. He was compared to Steph Curry. Now, maybe they meant Steph Curry dunking, in which case you have a different problem. But now, I think they compared him to Steph Curry because after the one touchdown, he did the little jump shot motion. I don't know if he is Steph Curry or not, but I think the more important thing is that he can be pedestrian for 3 quarters, which he was yesterday, and still beat your ass flat.
That's the thing he has in common with Steph Curry, because Steph can do that too. I think another thing is...
What was it? Oh, 0 points in the first half against Houston, 33 in the second? Or was it 32 in the second?
All 28 points were in one quarter in this game. And I think the other thing he has in common with Steph Curry is he makes certain things about this position look easy in a way no one else has ever done.
I want to spend the last few seconds of today's show with Marshawn Lynch talking to Dale Earnhardt Jr., shall we?
So you gave up some pretty good plans to come here today and stand around this heat to drive this pace car.
I did, man, I did. But I mean, I think I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, man. I've done it myself. They give you some pretty good pointers early in the day to get you ready and ready. You ain't nervous at all?
No, I'm not. The only thing that's wrong with it, I think I only get to go 45 miles per hour. I was expecting to put, they call it put the pedal to the metal. And really dry this thing, but
we'll have to finish this tomorrow. I love the way he said dry this thing. Great stuff there. Great stuff from our guests today. Thanks to Alex Boone. Thanks to Michael Irvin and Kenny Albert. Ray, great stuff. Matt, thank you. Thanks to everyone up in Sacramento. Welcome to the family. Albie, fantastic. Elena, merci beaucoup. C'est si bon. Please do remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Oh, my God.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.